Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope.
A man who taught many wonderful truths about life once said, "Make the most of your present opportunities. Make the most of your present opportunities." Let me repeat once again. Make the most of your present opportunities. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am, this is a wonderful piece of advice. Appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Make the most of your present opportunities. So many of us waste our present time worrying about the past or the future. And actually, we can do nothing about either the past or the future. Little sympathy or patience should be wasted on the person who is eternally crying for the good old days or bemoaning that things aren't as they used to be. Naturally, they aren't. Time changes all things, as it is changing you right now. And were it not for change, there could be no progress in this world of ours. Probably a good bit of advice to all of us would be to live every moment as it comes to us just as though it were the only one we had on earth. To appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Let your life be filled now with love, with happiness, with harmony, with courage, with faith. Too many of us are wasting energy trying to relive the past. And we are putting off our good from day to day, from month to month, and from year to year, so that we never quite catch up with it. Why not live now? Forget the troubles of the past and stop dreading the future. The expression of our powers and abilities is governed by our thoughts. If our thoughts are dwelling in the past or in the future, our power and abilities will be lessened in the present because they will be trying to follow our thoughts to realms that do not exist. We need all our abilities right now in the present moment. We cannot afford to dissipate them by letting our mind dwell on the past or by worrying about the future. If we live rightly every present moment, we shall have no occasion to mourn over the past. What does it really matter today, what happened yesterday, or some other day in the past? It is beyond our recall, so it is not worth the effort of worrying about it. Dr. Frank Crane expressed a bit of good philosophy on this matter in his short article called The Past. Says Dr. Crane, a good deal of morbid nonsense has been said and written and thought about the past. The past is irrevocable. We have been told in sermon and story, you cannot escape the past. The past can never be changed. And so on and so on. The whole trend of this thought being that the past is a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, dogging our steps forever, a sinister nemesis, waiting its chance to strike us down, the account book of an angry God, sure to confront us someday. All of this is morbid. Most of it is dramatic. The underlying sentiment of it is false and weakening and septic. As a matter of fact, our past, as Maeterlinck puts it so well, depends on our present and changes with it. Our past depends on our present and changes with it. What the past is depends upon the way you are now using it. Its effect upon your destiny will be gauged by how you translate it into the future. If we brood over the past and weaken ourselves with vain regret, with self-contempt and remorse, then that past will poison and undo us in the present. But no matter what the past contains of our sin or folly, we can, by a right use of it now, make it minister to our welfare. First of all, we can learn wisdom from the past. By it, we can realize our faults to be corrected and our offenses to be atoned for. And with this wisdom, we can go on to better things. The only true repentance is so to use the past as to enable us to build a better future. Weeping and wailing and brooding, those are the luxuries of morbidity. The past is beneath our feet. We can go down into it and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon that past to higher things. The great enemy of life is despair. The great friend is hope. Despair paralyzes, ruins. Hope energizes, for we are saved by hope. Face the future. Whatever the past has been, let it nerve you to spend your remaining days in faithfulness and loyalty to your better self. These are the words of Dr. Frank Crane, and I feel he certainly has the right view. Be concerned about your past only to the extent that it can teach you. The mistakes and sorrows of yesterday belong to yesterday. Yesterday provided sufficient time in which to consider its woes. Most of the worries, the griefs, the heartaches that we suffer are nothing more or less than memory of the troubles and hurts that we experienced sometime in the past. If we could only remember that sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Moffat renders this passage as the day's own trouble is quite enough for the day. And when you stop to think of it, isn't this true? We can readily understand from this that the miseries or woes of yesterday can enter today or tomorrow only through our memory. Before the end of yesterday, we should have put out of mind every disturbing thought caused by yesterday's situations. Those were yesterday's problems, so let them, along with yesterday, pass from sight and from memory. Let not the sun go down from your wrath is a mighty good bit of advice, or so it seems to me. We should not let the day close with our mind disturbed. It is too late to do anything about the way we let yesterday close. But we can do something about the way we let today close. Let us set today free in order that we may meet tomorrow, another new day, fresh and clean and unused, in the right spirit. Our wrath, mental disturbance, and physical miseries of yesterday have no place in our today. They only serve to crowd out the joys and blessings that are in store for us today. Each new day, a new world will begin for us if we do not carry into it the woes of yesterday. If we have not forgotten the woes of yesterday, we do not really experience a new day. To us, the day is just an extension of yesterday. When we let yesterday's sun go down, finding us wrathful and disturbed in mind, we are not obeying the biblical injunction to forget our miseries. We are not approaching a new day with a clear mind and a clean heart. The wisely given command to forget is a provision for our happiness. Were we to remember all our mistakes of the past, we should not have time to think of the good we want. Thou shalt forget thy misery. What shall we forget? What does the misery include? What comes under the category of wrath of mind? Everything not founded upon God or good and truth. It was meant that we should enjoy today to the exclusion of the wraths and miseries of yesterday. We are not to let one little rankling thought of yesterday sully the purity and beauty of today. You know, friends, the sleep that God gives us at night is but a form of his power to help us forget. Sleep is a vestibule through which we pass from one day to the next. We are to shed all our useless thoughts before we approach the next day. What of the wrongs that someone had committed against us yesterday or some other day? What of our jealousies and suspicions? What of the things we secretly accuse ourselves of? All these must go. We must forget them. They belong to the dream or nightmare of the past in which we have awakened to a new day. Are you willing to obey the command, "Thou shalt forget thy miseries"? You alone can decide. You alone can reap the benefits of forgetting. You alone can decide whether you will spoil this new day, fresh and clean and unused, by harboring the adverse thoughts of yesterday. You alone can decide whether you will today remain in the wrathful state of mind of yesterday, or whether you will make the most of your present opportunities. The things of yesterday brought to your mind, which cause you to be disturbed, are quite insignificant today. Forget them. Learn to wipe from mind every thought that works against your highest good. Enjoy today to the fullest. You can do this only by approaching it with a clear mind, receptive to the good in store for you. Let each new day begin life anew for you, rather than being merely an extension of yesterday. Start out this morning by obeying the command to forget. Make up your mind you are not going to try to carry yesterday along into this brand new day. Erase from your mind any sense of blame, any memory of failure, all thoughts of wrongs of the past. Was it not Ruskin who said, "Let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourself. Let me repeat, let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourselves. It behooves all of us to live in the present in the way that will make of our future that which we wish our present were now. Yes, friends, it's up to us. We can go down into and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon the past to higher things. It is up to us. And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Easton. This is UBC, the United Broadcasting Company.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is...
It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap, the name. MC Delight here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Sugar Brothers, life. From a black man, cause that's
swing. Things been stated, re-educated, evaluated. Thoughts of the past have faded. The only thing left is the memories of our belated. And I hate it when someone dies to get all hurt up for a silly gold chain by chump.
Word up.
It doesn't make you a big man. And to one ain't going dish your brother man. And you don't know that's part of the plan. Why? Cause rap music is in full demand. Understand?
Everyone, you don't have to be soft to be for peace. Robbing and killing and murdering is the least. You don't have to be chained by the beast. But party people, it's time I release.
Hey yo, here's the situation. Idiocy, nonsense, violence. Not a good policy, therefore we must ignore fighting, busting. Heaven's at the door, so there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together before we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another, it broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulty, people. Love your brother, treat him as an equal. They call us animals, I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. Take heed before I leave to what I'm saying, or we'll all be on our knees praying.
The heavy deep, deep in the heart of the matter. The self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jack in jail, but there's the best they ever duck. There's no one around, cause in jail you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction.
Yes, we urge to merge. We live for the love of our people, the hope they get along. Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
So we run around.
In your head, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect. To revolve, to evolve the self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves in check. Or else it's
developing this afternoon. Chicago's top cop says 59 gun shell casings were found after the shooting of a rapper right outside the Cook County Jail.
Superintendent Brown using this case and that situation as a reason to push for keeping violent offenders in jail. Elizabeth Matthews is live at CPD headquarters with more. Elizabeth?
Sally and Anthony, the superintendent, showing his shock and dismay that this violent repeat offender was let out of jail this weekend. The 31-year-old did have to post bond, and as a condition of posting that bond was going to have to be on electronic monitoring, but Superintendent David Brown says that is simply not enough. Leandre Sylvester was released from jail Saturday night and was targeted, fatally shot right outside the Cook County Jail. Police say there were 59 shell casings on scene. Two women were also wounded, though not seriously. The Chicago rapper was released after posting a $5,000 bond with a condition that he would be on electronic monitoring yet again. He was in jail for violating his bond following several weapons, assault, and habitual criminal charges.
All these prior arrests, these serious felonies, these very violent crimes, didn't keep him in jail. And it created an unsafe environment for others to put him on electronic monitoring.
So we're told there are about 3,500 people currently on electronic monitoring here in Cook County. So who decides who's on electronic monitoring? Well, you ask the police, you ask Cook County Sheriff, the state's attorney, the judge's office, and you kind of get the runaround. A source does tell us that it's up to the prosecutors, the state's attorney's office, in court to go to the judge and make those recommendations. Then ultimately, it is the judge who decides. Live outside CPD headquarters, Elizabeth Matthews, Fox 32, Chicago.
What's cracking, YouTube? Welcome back to Savage Studios. Much love, much respect. Be sure to smash that thumbs up if you like this video. We got a good one. I'm sure everybody's seen this video circulating around Instagram, Facebook, Google. When I first seen it, I was surprised it was even on social media. Very, very horrific way to go out. Man died on Instagram Live. I will be playing all the footage from beginning to end of this video with a voiceover and commentary. There's a lot of different scenarios in which people believed he was smoked, reasons why he was smoked. One being it was a setup by a girl, a couple guys. One being because he jumped hoods from Hollywood to Inglewood families. And lastly, the last one being because he defaced or took part in the defacing of Nipsey Hussle mural. Even though it wasn't him and the individual who did do it, Capone left his hood name and everything all over, sprayed all over this wall of the Nipsey Hussle mural. It's kind of convenient that he was on live with him when it happened. Now, there's a whole bunch of rumors, a whole bunch of gossip, but I have it from the streets direct that Hollywood has claimed credit for this incident taking place. Now, whether or not that's the truth, we'll get into that. We'll discuss that. But there's a bigger message here. There's a lot more to be learned from this video, from this whole thing. So without much further ado, let's just go ahead and get into it. And at the end, I'll close with my message to you guys. Much love, much respect.
On July 8th, approximately around 4 p.m. in the afternoon, this incident is believed to have taken place in Hawthorne around the 14100 block of Chadron Avenue. Now, while it's obvious he was shot multiple times from that Instagram Live video, reports have surfaced that he had actually been shot 3 times in his head. Many believe that this attack, this murder, took place behind the defacing of the Nipsey Hussle mural by his boy Capone, in which he was actually on the phone with during that Instagram Live and where he was shot to death. Now, however, that's not as easy and it's not as simple as that, because there's a few other scenarios that have taken place and a few situations that have arisen that I feel we should cover. See, Indian Red Boy wasn't always from Inglewood families. Let's get this straight. Let's get this out there right now. I know a lot of people have covered this, but I've actually spoken to somebody who left that hood, too, under the same reasons Indian Red Boy left that hood. There's always a lot of hate, and there's always a lot of backbiting in a lot of gangs. Pretty much every single gang you'll ever find yourself in, there's going to be a lot of hate. However, sometimes in some gangs and in some situations, it will be too much and cause a member to go from one gang to another one in which he finds better suits him, which is exactly what took place here, leaving the Hollywoods very upset. Now, although it's been confirmed to me that they may be taking credit for this attack, I need you to listen to his brother speak on this theory.
That set him up. I know that had to be the situation. That bitch and the 3 niggas. Y'all niggas is hoes. For real. Hoes. I'ma stand my ass up off of him. So, maybe don't try and come have the police on my fucking case.
So looking back at it, you ask yourself, what could be the real reason? You know, what could be the obvious reason in which this took place? Was it Hollywood? Were they mad that he jumped gang and was doing and thriving and pushing and banging harder than he ever did with the families? You gotta look at the hood. You got to look at the firepower they got. You got to look if they got any strength. You got to look if they a hood that's dying out. And you also got to look at the severity of the situation. Then you look at the situation in which happened with the defacing of the Nipsey Hussle mural. Now, that's something that's very, 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 very cruel. Not letting the dead rest, desecrating a mural. That is something that warrants immediate action, immediate retaliation, and how convenient. The man was on the phone with his boy, the one who actually did the defacing and had the nerve to write his name on it.
So there you have it, man. After talking about it, it's up to you on which conclusion you want to throw out there. I mean, personally, do I think Hollywood had anything to do with it? Do I think they got the firepower? Listen, yes, if they were passionate enough about it, they could do it. But Hollywood's a hood that is known to push people out. Man, I can't tell you how many people I know that used to be from there. That's what I write. That's right. That's exactly what I said. Used to be from there. I'm not sure that they're that mad about it. I'm sure that they got other bigger fish to fry if that's the case. Now, a realistic situation. Let's say it happened. Let's say his brother's right. Let's say it was a bitch. Let's say she set him up. Let's say somehow she put this whole thing together and got him set up for whatever reason. It wasn't a robbery. So there had to be some kind of ill intention, some kind of bad motive. Had he done her wrong? Had he done her dirty? Did he make her mad? Was he messing with another girl? Could it be as simple as that to lose your life? It could be. Likely, not likely. This seemed like it was an intended, structured, strategized, planned, walk-up hit. There's only one thing that comes to mind for me. You can't deface, you can't do things like that. You can't desecrate a mural, especially not somebody like him. It's one thing to go around. These young gang members want to go around throwing up, you know, this, middle fingers to this, middle fingers to that, when they throwing up their signs, and that's fine. Every hood doing it to the enemy hood. That's not, that, yeah. You can still lose your life behind that. But that's not something that's going to get the whole hood together and come find you. Now, doing something like what you did is. Now, let's talk about Capone, man. Let's talk about Capone. I mean, yeah, y'all see other YouTubers jump on here talking about, oh, that's gangbanging. First off, if you're not from Cali, bro, don't even, you can't even speak on Cali. Don't even speak on Cali business, bro. If you're not from Cali, don't say this is gangbang. You don't even know what Cali's like, first and foremost, so don't even go there. Oh, is it? Yeah, it's gangbanging. No, duh, it's gangbanging. It's gangbanging from point A to point B. It doesn't matter. If you stuck down here, if you in Cali, you're going to have a different message than, oh, that's gangbanging. Should've got what he had coming. Regardless if he had what he had coming. Regardless of that situation, let's go ahead and throw it out there and be real about it. I want to talk about Capone. What you going to do now, bro? What's going to be your next move? Where you going to go? You going to change your name? Your hood still going to claim you? See, when they went, when the news media pulled up and they taped everything off and they were taking pictures, there was a big jam up on the corner. Right there in that corner, they were having a problem with crowd control. Obviously, people had seen the Instagram Live. Obviously, Capone had let his people know. Obviously, it was most likely his hood. Mad. So the question is, who they really going to be mad at? They're going to be mad at Indian Boy Red, or they're going to be mad at Capone, or they're going to be mad at, you know what I mean, who they think did it. What you think? Personally, I think Capone, you brought a lot of heat to your hood, man. I think you did something that was not okay. I think you did not get a pass to do that. And I would not be surprised if that whole thing was okay, set up, and given. You know what I'm saying? As like a, hey, we understand the situation took place, was no bueno, you know, and for that, we're willing to go ahead and boop, you know, eye for an eye. Who knows? It wouldn't surprise me. It's mighty convenient. It's so convenient down to the very last word of him telling this boy, like, you ain't got that on you. What you going to do? And him getting got 5 seconds later. You know what I'm saying? So before I close out this video, I definitely do want to come with a message of positivity. Gang banging is not the way, yo. It's not. This ain't Florida. This ain't out of town. This ain't Virginia. This California. This the streets of Los Angeles, man. Be safe, man. Be calm. That gangbanging shit out here will really get you killed. I look in that man's eyes every time I watch that video. I look in his eyes and I see regret. I see regret, not because of the whole defacing the Nipsey Hussle, not because he chose to go from Hollywood to this gang. Nah, I see regret because he chose to bang. I bet you if that man had one chance to replay life, he would be the biggest square on this planet. He would be the best goody two-shoe guy on this planet. He would be achieving master degree, college, family, wife. That's the truth. That's California shit. So I'm telling you kids out there, everybody who's watching this, y'all think this shit is funny, man. If you could watch this video and it don't hit you, you got a problem, man. You need to grow up, because I'm going to tell you like this, man. There ain't no scarier feeling in life that I could ever think of than to watch your own life slipping away from your grasp. Can't even breathe. Can't even say the word help. You could only mouth it with your lips. The man knew he was gone. He knew he was gone. They found him dead on the scene. So this ain't gang banging. You know what you signed up for. Bro, that's the worst message that could be put out to you guys. The situation is this. Did he have it coming? Listen, I'm nobody's judge, jury, or executioner. What he did was, it was foul. And karma is a bitch. Karma does come back around. Karma's a mirror. So what you looking into the mirror and you see back, that's what you putting into it. True enough. Motherfuckers got to start thinking about the moms, about the wives, about the kids. You feel me? Yeah. Any dumbass can get on YouTube and be like, that's gangbanging. That's how it goes. Meanwhile, he's doing good. Staying straight. Staying out of trouble. Focusing on his family. Could say some shit like that. Well, if that's how gangbanging goes, get your bitch ass on the street and start banging again and get off YouTube, right? Exactly. I'm here to tell you the message, man. That's why gangbanging don't need to be around. That's why y'all don't need to join gangs, because of this reason alone. It's senseless death to the community, right? To the community that in which I appeal to. If I'm appealing to the culture, if I'm appealing to my culture, your culture, to our communities, like a lot of these channels are, the last thing I need to put out there to you guys is, well, that's banging at its finest. Oh, this is banging at its lowest. You know what I'm saying? I watched this shit the other day, man. He said it was banging at its finest. That ain't banging at its finest. This is banging at its lowest. This was never what banging was about. Not a blood hood, not a crib hood, not a south sider hood. No hood ever started with this intention of things to ever go down the way it's going down. Actions deserve accountability and consequences. True enough, I agree. I see the logic when they say the shit they say. But I don't see the logic in not promoting a positive message at the end of saying, do not gang bang. Do not gang. Much respect to those who chose to gangbang. That's what you do. For whatever reasons you felt you needed to join the gang, I get it. Been there, done that. I'm going to tell you like this, man. There ain't shit you going to get from it. Motherfucker, you join a hood with a motherfucker, he could get jumped out of this hood and go to that hood on you. You still banging the same hood, though, and now he's banging a new hood. You join a gang. Motherfuckers you join with all dead. Now what? That's your family. They gone. You join a gang. Now you're doing life in prison. Now what? Now you ain't got them. You ain't got your actual family. You ain't got your kids or your wife. End of the message. Moral to the story, man. This gangbanging shit is for the birds, man. Let it go. Let it be. Enjoy your life. Get your money. Get your women. Whatever it is you got to do, man. But there is no good positivity that could ever come from this, man. You might feel good. You might feel like you got a stack. Motherfuckers going to be hating on you. They're going to want that stack from your own gang. You know what I'm saying? You go to prison, man. Motherfuckers will smut you up for nothing. Get your head out your ass, people, man. We don't need to be doing this.
The original title of this podcast was Where Was Black Lives Matter with let me read it exactly, because I just changed the title of this podcast live stream a few minutes ago. The original title was Did Indian Red Boy Matter to Black Lives Matter? That's the original title of today's live stream podcast that we're doing right now. Did Indian Red Boy Matter to Black Lives Matter? But then, as I was listening to these audios, I changed the title to, and this is the question of the day, who kills more black people, the KKK, the police, or black people? Who kills more black people in the United States, the Ku Klux Klan? Is it the Ku Klux Klan? Is it the police, particularly white policemen, or white people in general? Or is it black people? That's what I changed the title of this podcast. That's the question of the day, too. So 619-768-2945 if you want to respond to that. And we'll repeat this audio that we played earlier.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
bugging. It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid, so to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause, the way we live is positive, we don't kill our relatives. Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap, the name. MC Delight here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time. Sugar Brothers, life with a knife. From a black man, cause that's
the
gotta go. Cause you could do crime and get paid today, and tomorrow you're behind bars in the worst way. Far from your family, cause you're locked away. Now tell me, do you really think crime pays? Even on taking what your brother has?
You little sucker,
you talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity. Cause if not, then you're we're soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed. C-rap race will be lost without a trace or a clue, but what to do? It stops the violence and kicks the science down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is formed and you learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach the East is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid. It
self-destruction.
Now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. they're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
And the question of the day, because I renamed the original podcast was in the I'm paraphrasing now. Where was Black Lives Matter, or where are they in relationship to the killing of Indian Red Boy on Instagram? But I changed the title of today's live stream to "Who Kills More Black People?" In the United States, at least, the Ku Klux Klan, the police, or black people? That's the question of the day. Also the title, who kills more black people, KKK, police, or black people? And have there ever been any marches among blacks, by blacks, for blacks to stop killing each other? Just a question. Another question is, who lynches more people? White supremacists, who lynches more black people in the United States? Is it white folks or is it other black people? Just a couple questions. 619-768-2945.
Black on black crime, you can find it in almost any major city like Chicago, New York, or L.A., but Chattanooga is nowhere near the size, nor has the population of those cities. Yet violent crimes by African Americans against each other in Chattanooga, it's just as bad. In part one of his special report, Eric Aubenier takes a deep look into black-on-black crime and its effect on the African American community. He joins us live in the studio to explain. Eric.
Well, as journalists, it's our job to report what's happening in our community. And unfortunately, we find ourselves covering black-on-black violence almost every other day. Now, before we begin, you need to know that in this report we're about to show you, it is very raw and emotional with language that some viewers may find offensive.
Crime scenes like this one play out almost every week in Chattanooga. And the story is usually the same. A disagreement between two black men or a group of African Americans that leads to violence. Some of the victims live, others die. No one knows this better than Celeste Woods. You see, 9 years ago, her son Damon was shot to death in this East Chattanooga neighborhood. She says she'll never forget that horrible night.
And the next thing I know, I was getting a phone call and said, Damon has been shot. And could you come? And this is the area that I came to, out here. And when I came, there he was, rope was taped around, and he was lying face down in the street.
To add insult to injury, Damon died on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, a day most Americans celebrate a man who stood for nonviolence, a day that carries more meaning for Woods.
It carries a very strong meaning, you know, that we need to get out and try to march and try to tell somebody, you know, it's not right. It's not right.
The shooting death of her son was the result of an earlier altercation with this man, Alex Smith, whom police later arrested and charged with murder. Current gang task force coordinator Boyd Patterson prosecuted Smith.
That particular case ended with a plea of guilty to manslaughter and a sentencing hearing. So that's what happened. He could have faced, it was between 6 and 10 years, but after the sentencing hearing, he was given 6 years.
Authorities say much of the violence playing out is gang-related. According to a recent study, blacks make up 89% of the gangs in Chattanooga. followed by whites at 10.5%. And the number of gang-related crimes rose from 127 in 2007 to 500 in 2011. Fred Hauser is the community outreach coordinator for the gang task force. He describes the level of black-on-black violence as an epidemic.
And we're seeing so many black children and mid-age black males and older ones that are being murdered as a result to gang violence and other kind of violence.
So why are we seeing more violence within the black community? And how does a disagreement quickly escalate to the need to attack or shoot someone?
For answers to those questions, we turn to a man who has ties to a local gang. Now, in full disclosure, for his protection and the protection of his family, we agreed to alter his voice and not show his face.
I'm guilty by association, you know what I'm saying? I ain't on no hood, I ain't on no set, but you know what I'm saying? The people that I hang around, you know what I'm saying, who I, you know what I'm saying, kick it with, them my people, you know what I'm saying? Them my folk, them my crook niggas, you know what I'm saying? That's how we rock it, so it is what it is.
He says the violence has more to do with personal egos and credibility.
Nowadays, you got to go through more to prove yourself as a man and stand your ground as a man. So a lot of the times, you know, it get carried away real quick, and that's how a lot of this violence and the gunplay coming about.
He says some neighborhoods are war zones, and during a time of war, people get killed.
I've been standing in the coastline of me and you and seeing a nigga get shot in the face. So, you know what I'm saying, it's crucial out here.
He also wanted to make it clear to young children to do something with their lives, to become a part of the solution and not perpetuate the problem.
Living this gangbanger's lifestyle and the things that come with it, it ain't gonna get you too far, and it ain't gonna get you established in life the way you need to be.
Now, you've just heard how bad the violence is playing out in the streets of Chattanooga. Tomorrow night in part two of this special report, we'll be discussing possible solutions that some say could curb the amount of black-on-black violence we report on a daily basis. Live in the studio, Eric Avenier, WDEF News 12.
Now,
today's podcast has been retitled to Who Kills More Black People in the United States, the Ku Klux Klan, the police, or is it black people? Ask the question, 619-768-2945.
How it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised with you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. On me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you, to let you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
Alright. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're gonna put you on a corner, you could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
See. be. He was a man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
Now, once again, today's podcast is titled Who Kills More Black People, the Ku Klux Klan, the Police, or Black People? That scene was from the TV series The Wire. And I'm just thinking, they killed, you got some people who died up that series based in Baltimore, Maryland. And as I recall, I think they ran for 5 seasons. Overwhelmingly, the majority of the deaths that was acted out in The Wire were by black folks. I'm trying to find, and I found it, but I'm trying. Oh, you know what? I know what I'll do. Before I went to the phone lines, I wanted to play one particular death scene. But I'm trying to think of, all right, in 5 seasons of The Wire, I'm trying to think of one scene where you had a white police officer or even a white person kill another black person. If somebody knows that answer, 619-768-2945, or in particular if they not only know the answer, but if they can provide me with a clip and I can go back and play it. But I've watched The Wire episode by episode twice now, and I can't think of any. Interesting. Now that scene was that I just played was Cuddy, the guy that says he couldn't pull the trigger. Cuddy originally was, as they called him in the TV show The Wire, a soldier. A soldier basically was an assassin. And in that particular scene, he could have shot this guy because he was running. The guy bucked. He was running in the alley and he tripped, and he fell down. And his gun was locked in on him, but he didn't pull the trigger, and the guy had enough room where, matter of fact, he even hesitated for a while out of fear, which was normal. But he got up. Good thing he ran, because Slim Charles come a little bit earlier, just a few seconds earlier, he would have shot him. But the guy, Fruit, who eventually got killed later on in The Wire, he was killed by another black person. So if you happen to watch the TV show The Wire and you know of any particular scene where there was a white person that killed a black person in that 5-year series, or a policeman, black or white, who killed another black person in that 5-year series, 619-768-2945. Before I go to the lines, I want to play another clip from The Wire. Matter of fact, in today's title, which is a question, who kills more black people, the KKK, the police, or black people?
Bye.
All right, today's podcast is titled, Who Kills More Black People, the KKK, the Police, or Black People? 619-768-2945 is the call-in number. Now, I'm using just as a backdrop, because earlier I played some audio of situations where, you know, like the guy that stepped out of the Cook County jail before he can get into the car that he was waiting to pick him up and take him home or wherever, he got riddled 64 times by two black people. Or at least two. It could have been more than that. But I'm using the TV show The Wire as a backdrop. And there's one, in that 5-year series, and I've watched it twice over, binge watched it. Usually takes me about a week to do it. Yeah, because I'm one of these late night people, or early morning people, you know. But a lot of times on the weekends, you know, I'll start on a Friday night. And then, you know, till Sunday night, something like that. But I can't recall any instance where there was a white person who killed, including white policemen, who killed a black person in there. Most of the deaths of The Wire that I recall, once again, 619-768-2945, if you can recall of any any instance where, you know, that might be cited. I'm about to play a clip here, and I got to get another clip to go along with it, maybe two possible ones, because well, I'll tell you what it is in a few moments.
It wasn't me who fucked up.
Oh, really? So who did? Why the fuck are we here?
Listen, all you need to do is keep your head through the bail hearing. Got a good shot of bringing you home here.
Then what? Hmm? We're going to take the weight for all the shit in the trunk of that car. Where's Wallace at? Where's the boy, String?
D'Angelo, shut your mouth.
Where's Wallace? That's all I want to know.
Kid, you better think.
Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? String. String. Look at me. Look at me! Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh?
I don't want this Payless man, motherfucker, representing me. I'm gonna get my own man. All right? So just get back in your car and get the fuck back down south.
All right, you stupid motherfucker. You made your decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. Where's Wallace at? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, String? String! Where the fuck is Wallace?
Now, I'm trying to load up another clip to go along with that so we can piece things together. So I'm going to play this again, but today's podcast is titled, Who Kills More Black People, the KKK, the Police, or Black People? That scene was, now, you hear DeAndre, that's the guy who has, or there are three characters in the scene. DeAndre, who is a drug dealer, who beat a murder charge again for killing another black person at the beginning of The Wire. And Levy, the white Jewish lawyer who was the lawyer for the Barksdale organization, drug dealers in Baltimore. And a lot of this is based on real people. There's a real Avon Barksdale. Not every character is highly fictionalized, but a lot of characters' names were really real people. And then you heard Idris Elba. He played Stringer Bell. All right. But in that scene, they were in the, I guess, Baltimore City Jail, Central Booking or whatever you call it. And, well, you heard what D was asking Stringer Bell, whatever happened to Wallace? So I'm going to play that part over again because I'm trying to upload what led up to that particular scene that ties into our title today.
It wasn't me who fucked up.
Oh, really? So who did? Why the fuck are we here?
Listen, all you need to do is keep your head through the bail hearing. Got a good shot of bringing you home here.
Then what? Hmm? You gonna take the weight for all the shit in the trunk of that car? Where's Wallace at? Where's the boy, String?
D'Angelo, shut your mouth.
Where's Wallace? That's all I want to know.
Kid, you better think.
Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? String. String. Look at me. Look at me! Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh?
Don't want this Payless man, motherfucker, representing me. I'm gonna get my own man. All right? So just get back in your car and get the fuck back down south.
All right, you stupid motherfucker. You made your decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. Where's Wallace at? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, String? String! Where the fuck is Wallace?
Huh? Okay. There's about, all right, let me play this next clip. All these clips tying together, I'm sort of like doing it backwards. But here's what happened to Wallace.
Where y'all at? All right, when I find y'all, you're going to get it. Better come out now. Where y'all at? Yo, I'm not even playing with y'all right about now. You hear me? Game over. Fuck y'all at? Alright, when I find y'all, I'm beating y'all asses. Now where y'all at? All right, don't let me find y'all. Yo, check this poop. Little man left us playing shit.
Weak-ass nigga, man. You should have stayed down in the country, man.
Yo, I'm a nigga, yo.
You fucking brought this on yourself, man.
We boys.
You brought this on yourself.
Man, you gotta be like this, yo. We niggas, man, BC, remember that?
Come on. You wet in your fucking pants like you a little boy. Be a man. Stand up like a motherfucking man.
I'm a nigga, yo.
Man, you said you was a fucking man. Stand up straight.
That's us, man.
Do it, goddammit, if you're gonna...
All right, I got another clip, but before I play the next audio, because this
Garcia
is
Wallace?
Audio.
We're looking for your son. Thought you might help us out as to his whereabouts.
Where who?
Wait
shit, I've been looking for.
Okay. We don't have the video port because this is a audio podcast. Let me explain who Wallace was in the TV show The Wire. Wallace, portrayed by Michael B. Jordan, before he got all swollen and everything. He was a kid back then. While the character of Wallace in the TV show The Wire, and this is set in Baltimore, and it in my opinion, is a very well-written show. It was shot in Baltimore. I mean, it's Baltimore, okay? Not all of Baltimore, but it represents a significant segment of Baltimore, because Baltimore is very diverse. In any event, the character Wallace is 16 years old. And Wallace was a drug runner. Nothing like a kingpin, but he was working to try to make ends meet. We really don't know anything about Wallace's parents. Maybe his mother was highlighted once, but he wasn't living with his mother. We have no idea where his father was. Like I said, Wallace, I think he was 16 because there was one scene where he was talking about going back to school, starting ninth grade at 16 years old, in Baltimore City. He took care of a lot of his younger siblings. So where he stayed at, because Baltimore has a lot of vacant buildings, boarded up buildings, and so he found a place in Baltimore, a vacant building, which is mind-blowing because Baltimore's got so many vacant buildings. I never thought about people living inside of these things, but there are people that are living inside, I imagine, quite a few of these vacant buildings. So he took care of his younger siblings. I mean, he made them lunch, made sure they had something to eat for breakfast. They had a place to come home. Although it was a vacant building, he provided a home. And even Poot, now Poot, because Poot, his boys, his niggas, as he would say, the two guys who lynched him, particularly the guy Poot didn't have a place to stay. So Wallace, in addition to providing a place for his little younger siblings, Wallace would even help his siblings out with homework assignments. Okay. While his mother was living with somebody somewhere. In any event, and like I said, we there's no indication of who or where or what happened to his father in relationship to his life with other siblings' life. Nowhere in the five seasons of The Wire. Okay. So Poot, who was also a co-worker of Wallace, and Poot could have been older, he provided Poot with a place to stay, and Bodie was a co-worker. They were singing in the, the Baltimore Projects back in the day. I think they've since tore those towers down in any event. So in that last scene, when you hear the gunshots, now, imagine, get the picture on this. Here's Wallace, who provided a home for one of his coworkers, Poot. Bodie comes over, and then while he's looking for the other kids to get them off to school or whatever, he turns around, and one of his coworkers, Bodie, one of his boys, one of his best friends, has a gun pointed at him. So I'm going to play this next clip, which leads up to that.
You know, we up in his house, Nate?
Shot dead, yo.
What up, man?
Same old, same old.
What's up with that boy?
Oh, man. He just a punk, that's all. D put him back on the count, though.
A word? I heard he was out the game.
He was, but he back now.
Where he been at?
At his granny house, he said.
It's granny, huh? I heard he damn near shit his pants when he saw what happened to Omar's bitch.
He just ain't built for this, man. It's heart pump Kool-Aid.
Man. What about you? You built for this shit?
No doubt.
You ready to put the work in? You got heat? All right, soldier.
Okay, now in that scene, and we're going to do we might do it this week. We're going to take, I'm going to call it this working title, because you can take the TV show The Wire, and there's a whole bunch of chess analogies all through the five-year series of it. And you can see who was playing checkers and who was playing chess. In any event, that scene was between Stringer Bell, okay, and Bodie. Stringer Bell, and we're going to play the three clips in order now. Stringer Bell, who was, I guess you can call him a drug kingpin. Bodie and Wallace and Poot were all working under Stringer Bell. Okay. Now, Stringer Bell wanted, basically he wanted to take out Wallace. He wanted Wallace killed. So he goes to Bodie, who is one of Wallace's most trusted friends and coworkers. They're colleagues. But more than that, Wallace thought they were friends. But Bodie is a company man in the drug business. Okay. So, and he's young. I think, now Bodie eventually gets killed too, but that's another podcast. But Stringer Bell asks Bodie to basically kill Wallace. So we're going to play the clips and we're going to go to the front lines. Today's question is, who kills more black people, the KKK, the police, or black people?
Where y'all at? Alright, when I find y'all, y'all gonna get it. Better come out now. What? Stop, where y'all at? Yo, I'm not
even playing with
y'all right about now. You hear me? Game over.
Fuck y'all at?
Alright, when I find y'all, I'm beating y'all asses. Now where y'all at? Alright, don't let me find y'all.
Yo, check this poop. Little man left us playing shit.
Man, you
He's a weak-ass nigga, man. You should have stayed down in the country, man.
Yo, you my niggas, yo.
You fucking brought this on yourself, man.
We boys.
You brought this on yourself.
It ain't gotta be like this, yo. We niggas, man, BC, remember that?
Come on. You wetting your fucking pants like you a little boy. Be a man. Stand up like a motherfucking man.
My niggas, yo.
Man, you said you was a fucking man. Stand up straight.
That's us, man.
Do it, goddammit, if you're gonna...
Garcia Wallace, we're looking for your son. Thought you might help us out as to his whereabouts.
Where who? Shit, I'd be the
fuck. Now, that scene ended with, like I say, Wallace. In the series, Wallace, the only parent that they showed of Wallace, and remember, Wallace was taking care of his younger siblings. At the very end, Dorcia Wallace or whatever, because Wallace wasn't living with him, nor were her other kids. So, and I guess they were notifying her that, her son got killed. But in any event, the first scene was Stringer Bell going to Bodie. And Bodie probably got killed around the age of 21, maybe. Wallace was 16 when he got killed. So as I stated earlier, Wallace was taking care of his younger siblings from breakfast, lunch, dinner, helping them with homework, all that, and a place to stay, although it was a vacant building, but for some reason, which they never went into the TV show The Wire, why they weren't with the mother. And like I said, there was no mention of the father at all. So Stringer Bell gives Bodie an order to kill Wallace. Then we hear Bodie and Poot, who are his best friends and co-workers under Stringer Bell. Bodie was talking all that. He was talking to him, stand up, you're pissing your pants and all that. And then, but he had the gun pointed at him, but he couldn't pull the trigger. So Poot, the man who Wallace is younger than these two dudes. Poot, who Wallace had provided housing for, who provided a home for him, although it was a vacant building, Poot didn't have no other place to go. Poot takes the gun from Bodie and shoots, Bodie pumps up. Bodie does take a shot. Then he takes the gun. Poot takes the gun and then finishes off Wallace. And then the last scene, we go to the three characters is Levy. He's not so important in this particular scene. But between Stringer Bell and Dee. Now, Dee was one of Wallace's best friends also. He looked out for Wallace. He truly looked out for Wallace. He tried to protect Wallace. And this is exchanged. It's primarily between Dee, who's locked up in the Baltimore City Jail, and Stringer Bell.
It wasn't me who fucked up.
Oh, really? So who did? Why the fuck are we here?
Listen, all you need to do is keep your head through the bail hearing. Got a good shot of bringing you home here.
Then what? Hmm? You gonna take the weight for all the shit in the trunk of that car? Where's Wallace at? Where's the boy, String?
D'Angelo, shut your mouth.
Where's Wallace? That's all I want to know.
Kid, you better think.
Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? String. String. Look at me. Look at me! Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh?
I don't want this Payless man, motherfucker, representing me. I'm gonna get my own man. All right? So just get back in your car and get the fuck back down south.
All right, you stupid motherfucker. You made your decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. Where's Wallace at? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, String? String! Where the fuck is Wallace?
Okay, I got one more clip. Okay, like I said, we're going to do a chess analogy breakdown of The Wire, and it'll take more than one podcast. But here's the last clip I'm going to play for today. And today's podcast is titled, Who Kills More Black People, the KKK, the Police, or Black People? 619-768-2945. This is the last clip I'll play for today. This ties in to D. Now, D was the one that was asking Stringer Bell, where's Wallace? Because Stringer Bell was the one who put the hit out to have Wallace killed. Mind you, all these people are under his they work for him, because he's one of the kingpins in the TV show The Wire. This next clip talks about D. All right, now, Wallace is, there's only two deaths that'll be mentioned today. We already mentioned Wallace. It's actually three. D killed somebody who happened to be black. Poot and Bodie killed Wallace, 16-year-old black person. And now we're going to hear about D. D was the one that was asking Stringer Bell, where's Wallace? But now we're going to hear from D's mother, from a detective, because D ends up getting killed too by Stringer Bell.
Hey, tell Lance to line 2103.
I called because I heard you went and visited Donette.
No.
Told him my son's death couldn't have been no suicide, is that right?
I did do that.
D'Angelo hung himself.
Not with the belt they found around his neck. Not at that distance between the doorknob and the floor.
So what are you saying?
What am I saying?
No. Nobody would have dared. My brother, his uncle would have...
I agree with you. Nobody would have dared. Unless...
Avon and Dee was family.
Family, right.
This is just you talking, right? I mean, anyone else saying it?
No, it's just me. No one else cares.
Right.
It's just, I don't know, on the inside. Somebody's going after you. Got a beef. Sees red. They use a shank. It's quick, and it's over. D'Angelo was strangled. Which is planned. You need the time. You need the isolation. Look, I'm just sorry I brought this whole mess up to begin with, because frankly, no one's going to do shit about it anyhow. Whoever killed him wanted to pass it off as a suicide, and the cops are happy enough to have one less murder to investigate. On top of that, the Anne Arundel state's attorney doesn't give a fuck. I'm not supposed to give a fuck, so... Guess your son just got squeezed between the sides.
Squeezed between what sides?
Look, 2 years ago, we hung more wire on your brother's crew than AT&T. You know, at the end, D'Angelo was this close to flipping, giving up everybody, everything. You know all that, right? You were the one who went down that detention center and talked your son out of a deal. I kind of liked your son, you know? All things considered, he was a pretty decent kid. And it grinds me that no one ever spoke up for him. Seems to me that nobody ever will. But mostly at this point, I'm sorry I bothered his girl. And I'm sorry she bothered you.
Why go to her? Why not come to me first?
Honestly? I was looking for somebody who cared about the kid. I mean, like I said, you were the one who made him take the years, right?
Now, in that scene, Detective McNulty is speaking to the mother of D. Now, D's the guy that was asking Stringer Bell, where's Wallace? Where the fuck is Wallace? Okay, because Wallace was truly Wallace. He was probably Wallace's only friend, I mean real friend, in the series. He was protecting him, looking out for him, and all that other stuff. In any event, but D eventually gets arrested again because D got off on a murder charge. D killed somebody who was black. He beat that murder charge. All right. So, and I don't want to do any spoiler alerts, but Stringer Bell has D killed. All right. D had gotten sentenced to prison and. He's in there, and Stringer Bell put a contract out on D's life, and D was killed. And I'm going to give you the details on that, but anyway, he's had him killed. So in that scene that I just played, D's mother, and by the way, D Barksdale, he was born into the drug culture of Baltimore City. His one of his uncles, Avon Barksdale, and Avon Barksdale is a real person. They've got videos of the real Avon Barksdale online. He was born into the drug culture in his family, and so that's what he's known. That's what he knew coming up. And his sister helped run the organization. They don't go into too much details, but she was handling some money. And she knew he was a drug dealer and all this other stuff because she grew up with and around drug dealers. But it got back to her that D's alleged suicide was not a suicide. It was actually a murder. So that's what that exchange was between her and McNulty, who was the detective. So, and the person who killed D in prison, he was black. So, going back to the reason why I'm playing these clips, because now, once again, the TV show The Wire, which is loosely based on real characters, but for the sake of TV, let's say a fictionalized television show, all right, but the writers were really, really close to reality, because let me tie this into the original title of this podcast today was dealing with Indian Red Boy. Indian Red Boy, who was brought to my attention by Warren Houston. Indian Red Boy, real person, was killed on Instagram. And then, this is recently, and then also very recently, within the last few days, there was a guy that was released from the Cook County Jail, and he was walking to his car, or somebody, he was walking to a car that was awaiting him. And before he, which is normal, happens every day of the week, before he got to the car to get in to be, you know, go home or wherever they want to go that day, he was shot 64 times. Now, that's reality. That's reality. Had it been, because you know how the United States press works, had it been two white folks that got out of that car and shot him, it would. We know how we play the race card here in the United States. Had it been two Native Americans that with red skin or with lighter skin, it would have been in the press. Had it been two Asians who got out of that car and shot him 64 times, and that's a lynching, we would have heard about it, because America, the American press at least, loves to absolutely play the race card as much as possible. We just love it. We're addicted to it. So the question of the day, and that's why I changed the title, you know, cause, as a matter of fact, where's Black Lives Matter on this little red boy case? Where's Al Sharpton? Where's Benjamin Crump on this red boy case? Real case, viral video that happened on Instagram. It seems like, particularly, and I know Al Sharpton recently did a eulogy for a white kid that got shot by the police, and Crump was there too. But typically you don't see those two, particularly, what's his name, Sharpton, unless there's a race element involved. So, and Black Lives Matter, where are they? Now, had Little Red, whatever his name, Red Boy, whatever his rap name is, had he been shot by a white person or a light-skinned Latino, like, what's his name, Zimmerman? Zimmerman's Latino, but he's lighter-skinned Latino, which would have given the opportunity for the American press to racialize the killing, then more people probably know about, you know, the whole Little Red Boy thing. It'll be interesting to find out if they ever solved that case, by the way. Just like, because when I'm thinking about, you know, when Biggie Smalls got assassinated, and what's that, Tupac? I believe, now this is just L.A.'s belief, I don't believe those two crimes will ever be officially solved. Why? Because essentially we don't care. When I'm talking about, when I say we, I'm talking about the American culture. We don't care, including black folk. We don't care when another black person kills another black person. We only care when there's a white person or somebody of another ethnicity kills a black person. Then we care. I'm just saying. Anyway, but later on, we might do it tomorrow. We're going to take the wire. It's so much to the wire, but there's a whole bunch of chess analogies in the TV show The Wire. 346, your mic is open.
Hey, good afternoon, good morning, L.A.
good morning and good night. It's morning where you are and afternoon where I'm at.
Yeah. I think that was a good title for the name of this show. I don't know if it's going to help anybody, but it certainly wanted to make you think. And, you know, Black Lives Matter, wasn't no money and wasn't the right politics in it for them. So, you know, that goes to show you, is it really about Black Lives or is it really about something else?
Right.
Because more murder and killer goes on among Black folk than so-called KKK or police brutality in 2021. And nobody seemed to care. I mean, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about Indian Red Boy being killed. But they don't realize this is really tragic, and it was insane. I mean, again, something is wrong when you riddle a person, you know, 64 times. I'm not going to say I'm not capable of killing because it depends on what kind of situation you put me in. But 64 times, who does that? So these are things that we're not thinking about. I mean, even in the neighborhood where my mother lives, a little 17-year-old boy that used to come out and play with my nephew, he was murdered last week. Another guy over there, he's in hiding because he did something with some of these guys, and they looking for him. You know, it's ridiculous, man. Yeah, I was just looking at an article, too. Somebody sent me an article based right here in Houston. I have to send it to you. It says, George Floyd mural crumbles after witnesses say lightning hit it.
Mm.
I was in the Fox 26 News today, this morning.
Mm.
Oh, man.
Now, they've defaced, because they released, that I know, about two George Floyd statues at least.
Yeah, I guess. I know they have a mural here in Houston that they put up.
All right, they got a mural and at least two statues. Yeah.
Well, at least it was. It said that the mural crumbled after witnesses say lightning hit it. I haven't read the article yet, but they came out this morning on Fox 26 News. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm like Pinocchio. I don't know what to say no more. There's not really much to say. We've been talking. And we've been talking for a long time. So the situation is not like it was back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Where, you know, civil rights, you know, a person just wanted to be treated like a human being. And you had Black people who wanted to be respected and wanted to build businesses and family-oriented. You know, nobody stopped anybody from building a business. Nobody stopping you from being family-oriented. Just something has happened. Something has happened that has really went south. And if you take people like Booker T. Washington and Martin Luther King and even Malcolm X, you know these folks got to be turning over in their graves looking at this foolishness.
Yeah, because what it seems like the current generation, maybe that might not be the right word, current element of some people out here, they've picked up where some of these KKK people, what they did during the Jim Crow era, they've picked up from there, taken over that, the killing, they've accelerated it.
Yeah.
Because you had, like, during the Great Migration, you had a lot of blacks that left the South due to lynching by white folk, okay? We all get that. That makes sense. But now,
yeah,
in 2021, and it didn't start just in 2021, now you got black people that might need to run away from other black people because, you know, yeah. You know, walking off, you know, you're walking down the street, you got to walk to the other side of the street because you don't feel comfortable if, you know, a group of four or five guys that are walking in, you know. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean that's what happens if you live in the black neighborhood, you live in a socioeconomically distressed neighborhood. For whatever reason, you become successful, you become wealthy. It is not in your best interest to stay there. It just isn't. There becomes a divide, and you know you become the prey. Just like you played this song "Self-Destruction," which came out back in the 90s. Like you were saying, I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, but I shouldn't have to run from a black man. But that's the situation. That sometimes,
and you know what,
Warren,
I know of two cases like that. I had a tenant some years ago that he was, he was getting his rent money together. So typically in the hood, you know, you go get a money order, you know, at, right around the corner.
Yeah,
so while he was going to get his money order, he got jumped and stabbed and robbed. Another friend of mine, and she was a landlord, she went and collected her rent. And she should have been more cautious in this case, but this is broad daylight. They followed her because she went to a convenience store to get a soda or whatever. They followed her to the convenience store and then robbed her right in front of the convenience store, broad daylight.
So they can talk all this stuff about, I think Falcon was mentioning yesterday, and you'll hear people say, well, you know, it's normal. Blacks are going to kill more blacks. Just like whites are going to kill more whites. But this stuff that's going on in the black community is not going on in any other community. Like this stuff is obviously insane. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, like I say, the reason why I played that Wire stuff is because, like I say, I was thinking about the little red boy because that's recent. And I mean, here's a dude. He was in his car on Instagram, like got millions of people do around the globe, and somebody kills him. And then Nipsey Hussle wanted to set an example. He was walking his walk. He was walking his talk, so to speak. You know, that you can be in a low income neighborhood and you can start a business. So he was walking his talk, and he got killed not by a Klansman. Okay,
nope.
He got killed by another black man, and it's interesting that Black Lives Matter, like you stated earlier, and that's a high profile death or assassination with Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter did not put that on their platform at all. Now, if they did, let me know, but I don't recall that they did.
No, they didn't.
You know, so on the Breakfast Club, they were saying, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, when you reach a certain income level, a socioeconomic level, it's probably more prudent for you to move out of that neighborhood. In the case of Nipsey Hussle, he probably shouldn't have had, or if he had a business in that neighborhood, number one, don't let anybody know that it's his business, and number two, he doesn't even show up on site. He gets a partner that lives in the hood. But nobody knows that he's behind it.
Although Nipsey Hussle's idea was very Robin Hood, his thinking, he want to save the community, he want to save the people. But had he just took his wealth and went somewhere else, he'd be alive today. He'd be alive today, still doing what he does. But he took it out on himself to go back and say he's going to help everybody. And so this is why I laugh, because this is the same thing I got with the People's Law Study Group. Sometimes we walk off into stuff and we see the situation and we're trying to help and assist, and then we end up getting messed up in the midst of it. You know, it's like me getting a law degree and thoroughly understanding the law. And I'm saying to myself, wow, you know, this is not as hard as people think it is. They just need to understand it. Let me go back in the community. Let me teach these folks and level the playing field, because I can see why they're so distraught. But then, you know, when you don't jump to their tune, then all of a sudden they change on you, and you're an outsider. So this is money, economics divide. The United States, when you think about it, and that's why racism sells, and they even put it out there, because you're dealing with a what's the word I'm looking for? Let me just stick with the word economics. When you're dealing with America, it's built on economics. It's not really every country is built on the idea of ethnicity or race or culture. We're not built on that. We're built on the idea of capitalism.
On capitalism.
And so, and that's what we're trying to get people to see. If you're buying into racism, you're being played. Now, the people that are selling it to you, they're cashing in. You know, you go back and check the history books, even when slavery was prevalent in the late 1600s and 1700s, you had black folks that owned plantations if racism was so...
Oh, yeah, there were over 4,000 black slave plantation owners in the United States.
Now, you tell me, if racism was so serious even in that time, how did you have one black slave owner?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Warren, hold on. I want to play this one clip, and then we'll take another call real quick.
I was singing that up.
Mr. and Mrs. Robinson. I should say hello, but from the expression on your face, I think I'll say goodbye.
Uh-uh, Junior. This is your home. This one place you don't break and run from nobody. Now, come on back here.
I think I'd rather, Dad.
I said, come back here, Junior.
How do y'all do? Can I offer y'all some Kool-Aid?
Junior, you don't offer Kool-Aid to Mr. and Mrs. Oreo. It's got to be imported champagne with custom-made bubbles. Ain't that right, Cookie?
That cuts it, Mr. Evans. I think it's time you and me get down.
Get down, huh? Well, listen, Annie. Get down. Well, that's pretty hip tough for somebody from uptown, ain't it?
Hey, where in the hell do you think I was before I got uptown? I was right here. Now, I busted my butt a lot of years to get out of here. And I made it. Now, you make it sound like success is a dirty word, brother.
No, the sex ain't the dirty word. It's forgetting. Forgetting where you came from, brother.
Damn right I'm forgetting. I don't want to know the stink of the ghetto no more. And that goes for my wife and my daughter.
But what the hell you think I want for my family, man? What you think I'm fighting and scratching for? And I tell you something, if we all lucky enough to make it, there's one thing we ain't gonna do. We ain't gonna forget the ones that got stuck here.
Right on, Daddy.
But maybe they should. Anyway, James never lived to end the end of that that not episode, but whatever 4 or 5 years that Good Times was on.
Yeah.
Oh boy, we got some issues here. 314, your mic is open.
L.A., did you read the email I sent you?
No, sir, not yet. I'm filling with a new device and I'm learning how to operate. Well, I'll get to it, though.
It says the African-American males are being attacked in every direction in America.
If the police aren't killing them, they are killing each other. 5-year time frame, over 324 African American people by their own race.
But you said 324,000
in a 35-year time frame.
Man, that's big. That's larger than a place like Richmond, Virginia. There's a lot of towns
Between 1899 and 1921, 3,436 people was lynched in 1 year in Chicago, 4,845 were shot with 745 murders. And in the last 42 days, from July the 12th, 795 blacks were shot by blacks in just one city, Chicago, including 112 murders.
Yeah,
I keep telling y'all these people are...
Send me that.
Man, well, you know what? That's tomorrow's podcast.
If,
we gotta
I tell
to,
you...
Because numbers tell a story. That's tomorrow's
podcast. Or it's the
because,
Huff,
I mean,
Huff Post.
That's like
the
over half the population... That's over half the population of a Washington, D.C. or Baltimore, Maryland. That's a city in itself. And God knows how many university, you know, the campus size. Man, that's a lot of people.
Well, see, that was 5 years ago.
And that's just 5 years, like you said.
It was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So 324, 1, 2, 3, 35. And 5 years ago, it was 16 to 21. Times 40.
Because you know what? There's only like 10 cities in the United States that have a population of a million or more. Three of those in Texas: San Antonio, Houston, and Dallas. But Warren, do you know the population of Austin or Fort Worth by hand?
Well, they consider Dallas and Fort Worth the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Even though they're two cities, they combine them
right,
to call it the DFW Metroplex. Austin, I'm not sure what the population is.
But
it's probably not
that's
over
a lot
a million,
of people.
That's 370,286.
Yeah, that's enough
to average it. Then... In about 30 years from 1973 2005 is over 20 million aborted. That's
yeah,
a whole
sure
damn country.
You should have sent me a copy of that, Pianchi. Email me a copy of that. I need to show some people that. They need to see those numbers.
Man, those are horrific numbers. Jesus.
So the Klan don't have to do anything if that's what the Klan and nobody else. Hell, cancer.
And you know what? That's why I changed the title and put KK in it. They don't have to do nothing.
No.
The Klan, cancer, attack, none of them got to do nothing but sit on the sideline.
And
kill them damn self. You got a population totally dysfunctional. If you was paying, there's no way in the world that my kid listened to this. That's not dysfunction. Destruction. Exactly what it is. I don't even know why they make it like that. Don't make no sense. But they do. They got a right to, so the heck with it.
Well,
yep.
That's man. Those are some crazy numbers.
Yeah, it was one was making fun of. I put that on Facebook. Pissed off, and wanted to remove it. So I went to the Post. Huff Post was pretty reputable. But they didn't.
Well, Warren, or Pianchi, basically, y'all doing what you're supposed to be doing anyway. So that's all you can do. You can't save everybody. Just save yourself or your family.
You don't want to save everybody. You don't want to be no place around.
Mm.
I wonder what they're going to do with this Arizona ballot count audit come out. This first audit. And it happened to show that Biden lost.
You know, you would like to, and I guess that's what Nipsey Hussle wanted to see. Because that's what I thought at one time. I would like to see, you know, first of all, the thing of blaming and pointing need to stop. And I'm saying, hey, you know, there's certain areas of town you can go in that you ain't got to leave a certain city. Everything you want business-wise is there. And that's one of the things they just try to point out to the black community. Say, look, you know, we don't have this. If everybody started focusing on education, you know, we wouldn't even have to leave our communities. We can have every store, every need that we need right in our communities. But it's not there. You know, and nobody's, the whole concept of wealth is not there. The whole concept of poverty, pestilence, drug-infested prostitution, all that stuff rule our neighborhoods.
Oh, heck, this stuff is on the no-go zones. Here it is. No-go zones around the world. Detroit's worse than South Africa. Killing this
Detroit,
person.
I've lived there for about a year. Detroit can be rough.
On 8 Mile
Road. Yeah.
Englewood. Blood Baby Capone. Watch his homie. That's the one you was talking about, huh? H needs to react. What kind of name is that? How the heck you keep up with it, L.A.?
Huh?
How do you keep up with something like
that? What, you talking about Warren Houston
with
was the one
that
put
like
me
that.
On. No, Warren Houston
was the
one.
How do you know what
they're
saying when
you're
listening to them? How do you know what they're saying when you're listening to them?
Oh, the wire stuff. Well, I'm quite familiar with Baltimore lingo, and like I said, I've watched it twice over. But I look at you know, everybody's different dialects, and you just tune into it. But tomorrow I'm going to get into some of those numbers that you brought up because, man, that's. Man, 300,000, that's a lot of people. I mean, you got, you know, you can combine college campuses, whole universities.
It's 370,000. Right about
I think the University of Maryland College Park, right outside of D.C., they might have like 30,000 students. I mean, and that's a pretty big spread out campus. And I don't know what Ohio State is, but there's several. I mean, 300,000, man. You know how many universities, law schools, medical schools? That's a lot of human resources gone.
No-go zones on 7 Mile Road, Detroit, USA. Free documentary.
I'm familiar with 8 Mile. I used to live right in that neighborhood.
So here's the thing. There's nothing for these people. Your politicians don't give a damn about you. As a matter of fact, these folks don't even work. They vote. Now they get them to vote. You got the Democrats that came up with this scheme of going to doors and knocking and asking if they took the shot. And all they really is harvesting voters. They're getting their names and phone numbers and all this stuff. They just harvest voters.
Right. That's what's behind all that free stuff. Now you vote, we give you a free cell phone or something like that and vote. And that's it.
Damn.
So these caught up with this. I don't see no solution for them. Other than why they wake up and decide to go a different direction. And it's going to make it that the artificial intelligence jobs that they able to even secure today, maybe, not going to be around in another 15 years, or even sooner. That's going to be a problem for a lot of people. Accountants, some lawyers, stockbrokers, grocery store stockers, warehouse stockers.
Yeah, I'm reading through that article you sent, Pianki, The African American Holocaust.
Yeah,
324,000. Jesus.
Well, how much you think? Man. How many people get killed in a year's time? And like I said, in Detroit, in Chicago, it was 745. So St. Louis, Baltimore,
and that's just Chicago.
Right. Well, I would say it's at least about 6,000. It multiplied 3 years. That's at 320,000 a year. You're right at 20,000.
Doggone it. This phone's crazy. All right. That'll shut it up. Okay.
Then the kids aren't being educated in schools. And when you start I don't believe in making people do down things. When you have people that want to escape,
Shane.
If you got people who want to escape and take out and go elsewhere, they realize themselves that it's not happening. Well, these people don't want that to happen because they make money off.
I'm basing tomorrow's podcast off this figure, 324,000. So we're going to pick up with that. Thank you all, guys, and I'm sure we'll have a lively discussion tomorrow.